gallows the precious parchment in her hand. The crowd had dispersed and the crows had returned to resume their feast. A singer pushed her off a mountain. Had the crows dined on Lady Catelyn's sister, too?
"You spoke of the stinking goose, my lady," said Sir Hyle. "If you want me to show you,
go back to your gate." A look of annoyance flashed across his face. A plain face, not an honest one.
"If that's your wish."
"It is."
"It was only a game to pass the time. We meant no harm."
He hesitated. "Ben died, you know. Cut down on the Blackwater. Farrow, too, and Will the Stork. And Mark Mullendore took a wound that cost him half his arm."
"Good." Brian wanted to say, "Good. He deserved it." But she remembered Mullendore sitting outside his pavilion with his monkey on his shoulder in a little suit of chainmail, the two of them making faces at each other. What was it Catelyn Stark had called them that night at Bitterbridge? The Knights of Summer. And now it was autumn, and they were falling like leaves. She turned her back on Hyle Hunt. "Podrick, come." The boy trotted after her, leading their horses. "Are we going to find the place? The stinking goose?"
"I am. You are going to the stables by the east gate. Ask the stableman if there's an inn where we can spend the night."
"I will, sir, my lady."
Podrick stared at the ground as they went, kicking stones from time to time.
"Do you know where it is? The goose? The stinking goose, I mean?"
"No."
"He said he'd show us that night, Sir Kyle."
"Hyle."
"Hyle? What did he do to you, sir? I mean, my lady?"
The boy may be a stumble tongue, but he's not stupid.
"At Highgarden, when King Renly called his banners, some men played a game with me. Sir Hyle was one of them. It was a cruel game, hurtful and unchivalrous."
She stopped.
"The east gate is that way. Wait for me there." "As you say, my lady, sir."
No sign marked the stinking goose. It took her most of an hour to find it down a flight of wooden steps beneath a knacker's barn. The cellar was dim and the ceiling low, and Brian thumped her head on a beam as she entered. No geese were in evidence. A few stools were scattered about and a bench had been shoved up against one earthen wall. The tables were old wine casks, grey and wormholed. The promised stink pervaded everything. Mostly it was wine and damp and mildew, her nose told her, but there was a little of the privy, too, and something of the lichyard. The only drinkers were three Tyroshi seamen in a corner, growling at each other through green and purple beards. They gave her a brief inspection, and one said something that made the others laugh. The proprietor stood behind a plank that had been placed across two barrels. She was a woman, round and pale and balding, huge soft breasts swaying beneath a soiled smock. She looked as though the gods had made her out of uncooked dough. Brian did not dare to ask for water here. She bought a cup of wine and said, "I am looking for a man called Nimble Dick."
"Dick Crab comes in most every night."
The woman eyed Brain's mail and sword.
"If you're going to cut him, do it somewhere else. We don't want no trouble with Lord Tarly."
"I want to talk with him. Why would I do him harm?" The woman shrugged. "If you would nod when he comes in, I'd be thankful."
"How thankful?"
Brain put a copper star on the plank between them and found a place in the shadows with a good view of the steps. She tried the wine. It was oily on the tongue, and there was a hair floating in it. "A hair as slender as my hopes of finding Sansa," she thought as she plucked it out. Chasing after Sir Dontos had been fruitless, and with Lady Lysa dead, the Vale no longer seemed a likely refuge.
"Where are you, Lady Sansa? Did you run home to Winterfell, or are you with your husband, as Podrick seems to think?"
Brian did not want to chase the girl across the narrow sea, where even the language would be strange to her. "I will be even more a freak there, grunting and gesturing to make myself understood. They will laugh at me as they laughed at Highgarden." A blush stole up her cheeks as she remembered. When Renly donned his crown, the Maid of Tarth had ridden all the way across the reach to join him. The king himself had greeted her courteously and welcomed her to his service. Not so, his lords and knights. Brian had not expected a warm welcome, She was prepared for coldness, for mockery, for hostility. She had supped upon such meat before. It was not the scorn of the many that left her confused and vulnerable, but the kindness of the few. The Maid of Tarth had been betrothed 3 times, but she had never been courted until she came to Highgarden. Big Ben Bushy was the first, one of the few men in Renly's camp who overtopped her. He sent his squire to her to clean her mail and made her a gift of a silver drinking horn. Sir Edmund Ambrose went him one better, bringing flowers and asking her to ride with him. Sir Hyle Hunt outdid them both. He gave her a book, beautifully illuminated and filled with 100 tales of knightly valor. He brought apples and carrots for her horses, and a blue silk plume for her helm. He told her the gossip of the camp and said clever, cutting things that made her smile. He even trained with her one day, which meant more than all the rest. She thought it was because of him that the others started being courteous, more than courteous. At table men fought for the place beside her, offering to fill her wine cup or fetch her sweetbreads. Sir Richard Farrow played love songs on his lute outside her pavilion. Sir Hugh Beesbury brought her a pot of honey as sweet as the maids of Tarth. Sir Mark Mullendore made her laugh with the antics of his monkey, a curious little black and white creature from the Summer Islands. A hedge knight called Will the Stork offered to rub the knots from her shoulders. Brian refused him. She refused them all. When Sir Owen Inchfield seized her one night and pressed a kiss upon her, she knocked him arse backwards into a cook fire. Afterwards she looked at herself in a glass. Her face was as broad and buck-toothed and freckled as ever, big-lipped, thick of jaw, so ugly. All she wanted was to be a knight and serve King Renly, yet now. It was not as if she were the only woman here. Even the camp followers were prettier than she was, and up in the castle Lord Tyrell feasted King Renly every night, whilst high-born maids and lovely ladies danced to the music of pipe and horn and harp. "Why are you being kind to me?" she wanted to scream, every time some strange knight paid her a compliment. "What do you want?" Randall Tarley solved the mystery the day he sent 2 of his men-at-arms to summon her to his pavilion. His young son Dickon had overheard 4 knights laughing as they saddled up their horses, and had told his lord father what they said. They had a wager. 3 of the younger knights had started it, he told her, Ambrose, Bushy, and Hyle Hunt, of his own household. As word spread through the camp, however, others had joined the game. Each man was required to buy into the contest with a golden dragon, the whole sum to go to whoever claimed her maidenhead. "I have put an end to their sport," Tarly told her. "Some of these challengers are less honourable than others, and the stakes were growing larger every day. It was only a matter of time before one of them decided to claim the prize by force." "They were knights," she said, stunned. "Anointed knights. And honourable men. The blame is yours." The accusation made her flinch. "I would never, my lord. I did naught to encourage them." "Your being here encouraged them. If a woman will behave like a camp follower, she cannot object to being treated like one. A war host is no place for a maiden. If you have any regard for your virtue or the honour of your house, you will take off that mail, return home, and beg your father to find a husband for you." "I came to fight," she insisted, "to be a knight." "The gods made men to fight and women to bear children," said Randall Tarley. "A woman's war is in the birthing bed." Someone was coming down the cellar steps. Brain pushed her wine aside as a ragged, scrawny, sharp-faced man with dirty brown hair stepped into the goose. He gave the Tyroshi sailors a quick look, and Brain a longer one, then went up to the plank. "Wine," he said, "and none of your horse piss in it, thank ye." The woman gave Brain a look and nodded. "I'll buy you wine," she called out, "for a word." The man looked her over, his eyes wary. "A word? I know a lot of words." He sat down on the stool across from her. "Tell me which my lady wants to hear, and Nimble Dick will say it." "I heard you fooled a fool."
The ragged man sipped his wine, thinking. Mightn't be I did, or not. He wore a faded, torn doublet from which some lord's badge had been ripped. Who is it wants to know? King Robert. She put a silver stag on the barrel between them. Robert's head was on one side, the stag on the other. Does he know? The man took the coin and spun it, smiling. I like to see a king dance, eh, nonny, eh, nonny, eh, nonny, ho. Mightn't be, I saw this fool of yours. Was there a girl with him? Two girls, he said at once. Two girls? Could the other one be Arya? Well, the man said, I never seen the little sweets, mind you, but he was wanting passage for three. Passage where? T'other side of the sea, as I recall. Do you remember what he looked like? A fool. He snatched the spinning coin off the table as it began to slow and made it vanish. A frightened fool. Frightened why? He shrugged. He never said, but old Nimble Dick knows the smell of fear. He come here most every night, buying drinks for sailors, making japes, singing little songs. Only one night, some men come in with that hunter on their teats, and your fool went white as milk and got quiet till they left. He edged his stool closer to hers. That Tarly's got soldiers crawling over the docks, watching every ship that comes or goes. Man wants a deer, he goes to the woods. He wants a ship, he goes to the docks. Your fool didn't dare, so I offered him some help. What sort of help? The sort that costs more than one silver stag. Tell me, and you'll have another. Let me see it, he said. She put another stag on the barrel. He spun it, smiled, scooped it up. A man who can't go to the ships, need for the ships to come to him. I told him I knew a place where that might happen. A hidden place, like. Goose prickles rose along Brian's arms. A smuggler's cove. You sent the fool to smugglers. Him and them two girls. He chuckled. Only thing, well, the place I sent them, been no ships there for a while. 30 years, say. He scratched his nose. What's this fool to you? Those two girls are my sisters. Are they now? Poor little things. Had a sister once myself. Skinny girl with knobby knees. But then she grew a pair of teats, and a night sun got between her legs. Last I saw, she was off for King's Landing to make a living on her back. Where did you send them? Another shrug. As to that, I can't recall. Where? Brain slapped another silver stag down. He flicked the coin back at her with his forefinger. Some place no stag ever found, though a dragon might. Silver would not get the truth from him, she sensed. Gold might, or it might not. Steel would be more certain. Brain touched her dagger, then reached into her purse instead. She found a golden dragon and put it on the barrel. Where? The ragged man snatched up the coin and bit it. Sweet. Puts me in mind a crack claw point. Up north of here, 'tis a wild land of hills and bogs, but it happens I was born and bred there. Dick Crab I'm named, though most call me Nimble Dick. She did not offer her own name. Where in Crackclaw Point? The Whispers. You heard of Clarence Crab, of course? No. That seemed to surprise him. Sir Clarence Crab, I said. I got his blood in me. He was 8 foot tall and so strong he could uproot pine trees with one hand and chuck them 1/2 mile. No horse could bear his weight, so he rode an aurochs. What does he have to do with this smuggler's cove? His wife was a woods witch. Whenever Sir Clarence killed a man, he'd fetch his head back home and his wife would kiss it on the lips and bring it back to life. Lords they were, and wizards and famous knights and pirates. One was King of Duskendale. They gave old Crab good counsel. Being they was just heads, they couldn't talk real loud, but they never shut up neither. When you're a head, talking's all you got to pass the day. So Crab's keep got named the Whispers. Still is, though it's been a ruin for 1,000 years. A lonely place, the Whispers. The man walked the coin deftly across his knuckles. One dragon by itself gets lonely. 10, no. 10 dragons are a fortune. Do you take me for a fool?
No, but I can take you to one.
The coin danced one way and back the other.
Take you to the whispers, m'lady.
Brian did not like the way his fingers played with that gold coin. Still, 6 dragons if we find my sister. 2 if we only find the fool. Nothing if nothing is what we find. Crab shrugged. 6 is good. 6 will serve. Too quick. She caught his wrist before he could tuck the gold away. Do not play me false. You'll not find me easy meat. When she let go, Crab rubbed his wrist.
Bloody piss, he muttered. You hurt my hand.
I am sorry for that. My sister is a girl of 3 and 10. I need to find her before some knight gets in her slit.
I hear you. She's good as saved. Nimble Dick is with you now. Meet me by East Gate at first light. I need to see this man about a horse.
Catelyn.
Rob.
She knew the moment she heard the kennels erupt. Her son had returned to Riverrun and Grey Wind with him. Only the scent of the great grey direwolf could send the hounds into such a frenzy of baying and barking.
He will come to me, she knew.
Edmure had not returned after his first visit, preferring to spend his days with Mark Piper and Patrick Mallister, listening to Ryman the Rhymer's verses about the battle at the Stone Mill.
Rob is not Edmure, though. Rob will see me.
It had been raining for days now, a cold grey downpour that well suited Catelyn's mood. Her father was growing weaker and more delirious with every passing day, waking only to mutter, "Tansy," and beg forgiveness. Edmure shunned her, and Sir Desmond Grail still denied her freedom of the castle, however unhappy it seemed to make him. Only at the return of Sir Robin Rygar and his men, foot-weary and drenched to the bone, served to lighten her spirits. They had walked back, it seemed. Somehow the Kingslayer had contrived to sink their galley and escape, Maester Wyman confided. Catelyn asked if she might speak with Sir Robin to learn more of what had happened, but that was refused her. Something else was wrong as well. On the day her brother returned, a few hours after their argument, she had heard angry voices from the yard below. When she climbed to the roof to see, there were knots of men gathered across the castle beside the main gate. Horses were being led from the stable, saddled and bridled, and there was shouting, though Catelyn was too far away to make out the words. One of Rob's white banners lay on the ground, and one of the knights turned his horse and trampled over the direwolf as he spurred toward the gate. Several others did the same.
Those are men who fought with Edmure on the fords, she thought. What could have made them so angry? Has my brother slighted them somehow? Given them some insult?
She thought she recognized Sir Perwin Frey, who had travelled with her to Bitterbridge and Storm's End and back, and his bastard half-brother, Martin Rivers, as well, but from this vantage it was hard to be certain. Close to 40 men poured out through the castle gates. To what end, she did not know. They did not come back. Nor would Maester Wyman tell her who they had been, where they had gone, or what had made them so angry.
"I'm here to see to your father, and only that, my lady," he said. "Your brother will soon be Lord of Riverrun. What he wishes you to know, he must tell you."
But now Rob was returned from the west, returned in triumph.
"He will forgive me," Catelyn told herself. "He must forgive me. He is my own son, and Arya and Sansa are as much his blood as mine. He will free me from these rooms, and then I will know what has happened."
By the time Sir Desmond came for her, she had bathed and dressed and combed out her auburn hair.
"King Rob has returned from the west, my lady," the knight said.
and commands that you attend him in the great hall."
It was the moment she had dreamed of and dreaded. Have I lost two sons, or three? She would know soon enough. The hall was crowded when they entered. Every eye was on the dais, but Catelyn knew their backs. Lady Mormont's patched ringmail, the great John and his son looming over every other head in the hall. Lord Jason Mallister, white-haired with his winged helm in the crook of his arm. Titus Blackwood in his magnificent raven-feather cloak. Half of them will want to hang me now. The other half may only turn their eyes away. She had an uneasy feeling that someone was missing, too. Rob stood on the dais. He is a boy no longer, she realized with a pang. He's 16 now, a man grown. Just look at him. War had melted all the softness from his face and left him hard and lean. He had shaved his beard away, but his auburn hair fell uncut to his shoulders. The recent rains had rusted his mail and left bronze stains on the white of his cloak and surcoat. Perhaps the stains were blood. On his head was a sword crown. They had fashioned him of bronze and iron. He bears it more comfortably now. He bears it like a king. Edmure stood below the crowded dais, head bowed modestly as Rob praised his victory. Fell at the stone mill. Shall never be forgotten. Small wonder Lord Tywin ran off to fight Stannis. He'd had his fill of Northmen and Rivermen both. That brought laughter and approving shouts, but Rob raised a hand for quiet. Make no mistake, though, the Lannisters will march again, and there will be other battles to win before the kingdom is secure. The great John roared out, King in the North! And thrust a mail fist into the air. The river lords answered with a shout of, King of the Trident! The hall grew thunderous with pounding fists and stamping feet. Only a few noted Catelyn and Sir Desmond amidst the tumult, but they elbowed their fellows, and slowly a hush grew around her. She held her head high and ignored the eyes. Let them think what they will. It is Rob's judgment that matters. The sight of Sir Brynden Tully's craggy face on the dais gave her comfort. A boy she did not know seemed to be acting as Rob Squire. Behind him stood a young knight in a sand-coloured surcoat blazoned with seashells, and an older one who wore three black pepper pots on a saffron bend across a field of green and silver stripes. Between them were a handsome older lady and a pretty maid who looked to be her daughter. There was another girl as well, near Sansa's age. The seashells were the sigil of some lesser house, Catelyn knew. The older man's she did not recognize. Prisoners? Why would Rob bring captives onto the dais? Uthryze Wayne banged his staff on the floor as Sir Desmond escorted her forward. If Rob looks at me as Edmure did, I do not know what I will do. But it seemed to her that it was not anger she saw in her son's eyes, but something else. Apprehension, perhaps. No, that made no sense. What should he fear? He was the young wolf, king of the Trident and the North. Her uncle was the first to greet her. As black a fish as ever, Sir Brynden had no care for what the others might think. He leapt off the dais and pulled Catelyn into his arms. When he said, It's good to see you home, Cat, she had to struggle to keep her composure. And you, she whispered. Mother. Catelyn looked up at her tall, kingly son. Your Grace, I have prayed for your safe return. I had heard you were wounded. I took an arrow through the arm while storming the crag, he said. It healed well, though. I had the best of care. The guards are good, then. Catelyn took a deep breath. Say it. It cannot be avoided. They will have told you what I did. Did they tell you my reasons? For the girls?
I had 5 children. Now I have 3.
Aye, my lady.
Lord Rickard Carstark pushed past the Great John, like some grim spectre with his black mail and long, ragged grey beard, his narrow face pinched and cold.
And I have 1 son, who once had 3. You have robbed me of my vengeance.
Catelyn faced him calmly. Lord Rickard, the Kingslayer's dying would not have bought life for your children. His living may buy life for mine. The Lord was unappeased.
Jaime Lannister has played you for a fool. You bought a bag of empty words, no more. My Turin and my Eddard deserved better of you.
Leave off, Carstark,
grumbled the Great John, crossing his huge arms against his chest.
It was a mother's folly. Women are made that way.
A mother's folly?
Lord Carstark rounded on Lord Umber.
I name it treason. Enough!
For just an instant, Rob sounded more like Brandon than his father. No man calls my Lady Winterfell a traitor in my hearing, Lord Rickard. When he turned to Catelyn, his voice softened. If I could wish the Kingslayer back in chains, I would. You freed him without my knowledge or consent. But what you did, I know you did for love, for Arya and Sansa, and out of grief for Bran and Rickon. Love's not always wise, I've learned. It can lead us to great folly, but we follow our hearts wherever they take us. Don't we, Mother? Is that what I did? If my heart led me into folly, I would gladly make whatever amends I can to Lord Carstark and yourself. Lord Rickard's face was implacable.
Will your amends warm Torren and Eddard in their cold graves, where the Kingslayer laid them?
He shouldered past the Great John and Mage Mormont and left the hall. Rob made no move to detain him. Forgive him, Mother. If you will forgive me, I have. I know what it is to love so greatly, you can think of nothing else. Catelyn bowed her head.
Thank you. I have not lost this child, at least.
We must talk, Rob went on. You and my uncles, of this and other things. Stuart, call an end. Uther Wayne slammed his staff on the floor and shouted the dismissal, and river lords and northerners alike moved toward the doors. It was only then that Catelyn realized what was amiss. The wolf. The wolf is not here. Where is Grey Wind? She knew the dire wolf had returned with Rob. She had heard the dogs, but he was not in the hall, not at her son's side where he belonged. Before she could think to question Rob, however, she found herself surrounded by a circle of well-wishers. Lady Mormont took her hand and said,
My lady, if Cersei Lannister held 2 of my daughters, I would have done the same.
The Great John, no respecter of proprieties, lifted her off her feet and squeezed her arms with his huge hairy hands.
Your wolf pup maul the Kingslayer once. He'll do it again, if need be.
Gorbart Glover and Lord Jason Mallister were cooler, and Jonas Bracken almost icy, but their words were courteous enough. Her brother was the last to approach her.
I pray for your girls as well, Cat. I hope you do not doubt that.
Of course not. She kissed him. I love you for it. When all the words were done, the Great Hall of Riverrun was empty, save for Rob, the 3 Tullys, and the 6 strangers Catelyn could not place. She eyed them curiously. My lady, sirs, are you new to my son's cause? New, said the younger knight, him of the seashells, but fierce in our courage and firm in our loyalties, as I hope to prove to you, my lady. Rob looked uncomfortable. Mother, he said, may I present the Lady Sybil, the wife of Lord Gawain Westerling of the Crag. The older woman came forward with solemn mien. Her husband was one of those we took captive in the Whispering Wood.
Westerling, yes, Catelyn thought. Their banner is 6 seashells, white on sand. A minor house sworn to the Lannisters.
Rob beckoned the other strangers forward, each in turn. Sir Rolf Spicer, Lady Sybil's brother. He was castellan at the crag when we took it. The Pepperpot Knight inclined his head, a square-built man with a broken nose and a close-cropped grey beard. He looked doughty enough. The children of Lord Gawain and Lady Sybil. Sir Reynard Westerling. The Seashell Knight smiled beneath a bushy moustache. Young, lean, rough-hewn, he had good teeth and a thick mop of chestnut hair. Elenia. The little girl did a quick curtsy. Rolam Westerling, my squire. The boy started to kneel, saw no one else was kneeling, and bowed instead. The honour is mine, Catelyn said. Can Rob have won the crag's allegiance? If so, it was no wonder the Westlings were with him. Castle Rock did not suffer such betrayals gently, not since Tywin Lannister had been old enough to go to war. The maid came forward last, and very shy. Rob took her hand. Mother, he said, I have the great honour to present you the Lady Jane Westerling, Lord Gawain's elder daughter and my lady wife. The first thought that flew across Catelyn's mind was, no, that cannot be, you're only a child. The second was, and besides, you have pledged another. The third was, Mother, have mercy, Rob, what have you done? Only then came her belated remembrance. Follies done for love, he has bagged me neat as a hare in the snare. I seem to have already forgiven him. Mixed with her annoyance was a rueful admiration. The scene had been staged with a cunning worthy of a master mummer, or a king. Catelyn saw no choice but to take Jane Westling's hands. I have a new daughter, she said, more stiffly than she'd intended. She kissed the terrified girl on both cheeks. Be welcome to our hall and hearth. Thank you, my lady. I shall be a good and true wife to Rob, I swear, and as wise a queen as I can. Queen? Yes, this pretty little girl is a queen. I must remember that.
She was pretty, undeniably, with her chestnut curls and heart-shaped face and that shy smile. Slender, but with good hips, Catelyn noted. She should have no trouble bearing children, at least. Lady Sybil took a hand before any more was said.
We are honoured to be joined to House Stark, my lady, but we are also very wary. We have come a long way in a short time. Perhaps we might retire to our chambers, so you may visit with your son.
That would be best. Rob kissed his Jane. The steward will find you suitable accommodations.
I'll take you to him, Sir Edmure Tully volunteered. You are most kind, said Lady Sybil.
Must I go too?
Asked the boy Rolam.
I'm your squire.
Rob laughed. But I'm not in need of squiring just now.
Oh. His Grace has gotten along for 16 years without you, Rolam, said Sir Reynold of the Seashells. He will survive a few hours more, I think.
Taking his little brother firmly by the hand, he walked him from the hall. Your wife is lovely, Catelyn said when they were out of earshot. And the Westerlings seem worthy, though Lord Gawain is Tywin Lannister's sworn man, is he not?
Yes. Jason Mallister captured him in the Whispering Wood and has been holding him at sea guard for ransom. Of course I'll free him now, though he may not wish to join me. We wed without his consent, I fear, and this marriage puts him in dire peril. The crag is not strong. For love of me, Jane may lose all.
And you, she said softly, have lost the phrase. His wince told all. She understood the angry voices now, why Perwin Frey and Martin Rivers had left in such haste, trampling Rob's banner into the ground as they went.
Dare I ask how many swords come with your bride, Rob?
50, a dozen knights. His voice was glum.
as well it might be. When the marriage contract had been made at the Twins, old Lord Walder Frey had sent Rob off with 1,000 mounted knights and near 3,000 foot. Jane is bright as well as beautiful, and kind as well. She has a gentle heart. It is swords you need, not gentle hearts. How could you do this, Rob? How could you be so heedless, so stupid? How could you be so very young? Reproaches would not serve here, however. All she said was, "Tell me how this came to be." "I took her castle, and she took my heart," Rob smiled. "The crag was weakly garrisoned, so we took it by storm one night. Black Walder and the Small John led scaling parties over the walls, while I broke through the main gate with a ram. I took an arrow in the arm just before Sir Rolf yielded us the castle. It seemed nothing at first, but it festered. Jane had me taken to her own bed, and she nursed me until the fever passed. And she was with me when the great John brought me the news of Winterfell, Bran, and Rickon." He seemed to have trouble saying his brother's names. "That night she comforted me, Mother." Catelyn did not need to be told what sort of comfort Jane Westling had offered her son. "And you wed her the next day?" He looked in her eyes, proud and miserable all at once. "It was the only honourable thing to do. She's gentle and sweet, Mother. She will make me a good wife. Perhaps that will not appease Lord Frey." "I know," her son said, stricken. "I've made a botch of everything but the battles, haven't I? I thought the battles would be the hard part, but if I had listened to you and kept Theon as my hostage, I'd still rule the North, and Bran and Rickon would be alive and safe in Winterfell." "Perhaps, or not. Lord Balin might still have chanced war. The last time he reached for a crown, it cost him 2 sons. He might have thought it a bargain to lose only 1 this time." She touched his arm. "What happened with the phrase, after you wed?" Rob shook his head. "With Sir Stevron, I might have been able to make amends, but Sir Ryman is dull-witted as a stone. And Black Walder, that one was not named for the colour of his beard, I promise you. He went so far as to say that his sisters would not be loath to wed a widower. I would have killed him for that, if Jane had not begged me to be merciful. You have done House Frey a grievous insult, Rob." "I never meant to. Sir Stevron died for me, and Olivar was as loyal a squire as any king could want. He asked to stay with me, but Sir Ryman took him with the rest, all their strength. The great John urged me to attack them." "Fighting your own in the midst of your enemies," she said, "it would have been the end of you." "Yes, I thought perhaps we could arrange other matches for Lord Walder's daughters. Sir Wendell Manderley has offered to take one, and the great John tells me his uncles wish to wed again. If Lord Walder will be reasonable—" "He is not reasonable," said Catelyn. "He is proud and prickly to a fault. You know that. He wanted to be grandfather to a king. You will not appease him with the offer of 2 hoary old brigands and the second son of the fattest man in the 7 kingdoms. Not only have you broken your oath, but you've slighted the honour of the Twins by choosing a bride from a lesser house." Rob bristled at that. "The Westerlings are better blood than the Freys. They're an ancient line, descended from the first men. The kings of the Rock sometimes wed Westerlings before the conquest, and there was another Jane Westerling who was queen to King Maegor 300 years ago. All of which will only salt Lord Walder's wounds. It has always rankled him that older houses look down on the Freys as upstarts. This insult is not the first he's borne to hear him tell it. John Arryn was disinclined to foster his grandsons, and my father refused the offer of one of his daughters for Edmure." She inclined her head toward her brother as he rejoined them. "Your Grace," Brynden Blackfish said, "perhaps we had best continue this in private. Yes. Rob sounded tired. I would kill for a cup of wine. The audience chamber, I think.
As they started up the steps, Catelyn asked the question that had been troubling her since she entered the hall. Rob, where is Grey Wind?
In the yard, with a haunch of mutton. I told the kennel master to see that he was fed.
You always kept him with you before.
A hall is no place for a wolf. He gets restless, you've seen, growling and snapping. I should never have taken him into battle with me. He's killed too many men to fear them now. Jane's anxious around him, and he terrifies her mother.
And there's the heart of it, Catelyn thought. He is part of you, Rob. To fear him is to fear you.
I'm not a wolf, no matter what they call me.
Rob sounded cross.
Grey Wind killed a man at the Crag, another at Ashmark, and six or seven at Oxcross. If you had seen...
I saw Bran's wolf tear out a man's throat at Winterfell, she said sharply, and loved him for it.
That's different. The man at the Crag was a knight. Jane had known all her life. You can't blame her for being afraid. Grey Wind doesn't like her uncle either. He bares his teeth every time Sir Rolf comes near him.
A chill went through her.
Send Sir Rolf away. At once.
Where?
Back to the Crag, so the Lannisters can mount his head on a spike. Jane loves him. He's her uncle. And a fair knight, besides. I need more men like Rolf Spicer, not fewer. I'm not going to banish him just because my wolf doesn't seem to like the way he smells.
Rob. She stopped and held his arm. I told you once to keep Theon Greyjoy close, and you did not listen.
Listen now. Send this man away. I'm not saying you must banish him. Find some task that requires a man of courage, some honourable duty. What it is matters not, but do not keep him near you.
He frowned.
Should I have Grey Wind sniff all my knights? There might be others who smell he mislikes.
Any man Grey Wind mislikes is a man I do not want close to you. These wolves are more than wolves, Rob. You must know that. I think perhaps the guards sent them to us. Your father's guards, the old guards of the North. Five wolf pups, Rob. Five for five Stark children.
Six, said Rob. There was a wolf for John as well. I found them, remember?
I know how many there were and where they came from. I used to think the same as you, that the wolves were our guardians, our protectors, until...
Until? She prompted.
Rob's mouth tightened.
Until they told me that Theon had murdered Bran and Rickon. Small good their wolves did them. I'm no longer a boy, Mother. I'm a king, and I can protect myself.
He sighed.
I will find some duty for Sir Rolf, some pretext to send him away. Not because of his smell, but to ease your mind. You have suffered enough.
Relieved, Catelyn kissed him lightly on the cheek before the others could come around the turn of the stair, and for a moment he was her boy again, not her king. Lord Huster's private audience chamber was a small room above the great hall, better suited to intimate discussions. Rob took the high seat, removed his crown, and set it on the floor beside him as Catelyn rang for wine. Edmure was filling his uncle's ear with the whole story of the fight at the stone mill. It was only after the servants had come and gone that the Blackfish cleared his throat and said,
I think we've all heard sufficient of your boasting, nephew.
Edmure was taken aback.
Boasting? What do you mean?
I mean, said the Blackfish, that you owe his grace your thanks for his forbearance. He played out that mummer's farce in the great hall, so as not to shame you before your own people. Had it been me, I would have flayed you for your stupidity rather than praising this folly of the fords.
Good men died to defend those fords, uncle,
Edmure sounded outraged.
What, is no one to win victories by the young wolf Did I steal some glory meant for you, Rob?
Your Grace, Rob corrected icy. You took me for your king, Uncle. Or have you forgotten that as well? The Blackfish said, You were commander to hold River Run, Edmure. No more.
I held River Run, and I blooded Lord Tywin's nose.
So you did, said Rob. But a bloody nose won't win the war, will it? Did you ever think to ask yourself why we remained in the West so long after Oxcross? You knew I did not have enough men to threaten Lannisport or Casterly Rock.
Why? There were other castles. Gold, cattle.
You think we stayed for plunder? Rob was incredulous. Uncle, I wanted Lord Tywin to come west. We were all horsed, Sir Brynden said. The Lannister host was mainly foot. We planned to run Lord Tywin a merry chase up and down the coast, then slip behind him to take a strong defensive position athwart the Gold Road at a place my scouts had found where the ground would have been greatly in our favour. If he had come at us there, he would have paid a grievous price. But if he did not attack, he would have been trapped in the west, 1,000 leagues from where he needed to be. All the while, we would have lived off his land instead of him living off ours. Lord Stannis was about to fall upon King's Landing, Rob said. He might have rid us of Joffrey, the Queen, and the Imp in one red stroke. Then we might have been able to make a peace. Edmure looked from uncle to nephew.
You never told me.
I told you to hold River Run, said Rob. What part of that command did you fail to comprehend? When you stopped Lord Tywin on the Red Fork, said the Blackfish, you delayed him just long enough for riders out of Bitterbridge to reach him with word of what was happening to the east. Lord Tywin turned his host at once, joined up with Mathis Rowan and Randall Tarley near the headwaters of the Blackwater, and made a forced march to Tumbler's Falls, where he found Mace Tyrell and two of his sons waiting with a huge host and a fleet of barges. They floated down the river, disembarked half a day's ride from the city, and took Stannis in the rear. Catelyn remembered King Renly's court as she had seen it at Bitterbridge, 1,000 golden roses streaming in the wind, Queen Marjorie's shy smile and soft words, her brother, the Knight of Flowers, with a bloody linen around his temples. If you had to fall in a woman's arms, my son, why couldn't they have been Marjorie Tyrell's? The wealth and power of Highgarden could have made all the difference in the fighting yet to come, and perhaps Grey Wind would have liked the smell of her as well. Edmure looked ill.
I never meant, never, Rob. You must let me make amends. I will lead the van in the next battle.
For amends, brother? Or for glory? Catelyn wondered. The next battle, Rob said. Well, that will be soon enough. Once Joffrey is wed, the Lannisters will take the field against me once more, I don't doubt. And this time the Tyrells will march beside them. And I may need to fight the Freys as well, if Black Walder has his way. So long as Theon Greyjoy sits in your father's seat, with your brother's blood on his hands, these other foes must wait, Catelyn told her son. Your first duty is to defend your own people, win back Winterfell, and hang Theon in a crow's cage to die slowly. Or else, put off that crown for good, Rob, for men will know that you are no true king at all. From the way Rob looked at her, she could tell that it had been a long while since anyone had dared speak to him so bluntly. When they told me Winterfell had fallen, I wanted to go north at once, he said, with a hint of defensiveness. I wanted to free Bran and Rickon, but I thought, I never dreamed that Theon could harm them, truly. If I had, it's too late for ifs, and too late for rescues, Catelyn said. All that remains is vengeance. The last word we had from the north, Sir Roderick had defeated a force of iron men near Torren Square, and was assembling a host at Castle Serwyn to retake Winterfell, said Rob. By now he may have done it. There's been no news for a long time. And what of the Trident? If I turn north, I can't ask the River Lords to abandon their own people. No, said Catelyn. Leave them to guard their own, and win back the north, with Northmen. How will you get the Northmen to the north? Her brother Edmure asked. The Iron Men control the Sunset Sea. The Greyjoys hold Moat Cailin as well. No army's ever taken Moat Cailin from the south. Even to march against it is madness. We could be trapped on the causeway, with the Ironborn before us and angry Freys at our back. We must win back the Freys, said Rob. With them, we still have some chance of success, however small. Without them, I see no hope. I'm willing to give Lord Walder whatever he requires, apologies, honours, lands, gold. There must be something that would soothe his pride. Not something, said Catelyn. Someone.
Tyrion. For a long while he did not stir, but lay unmoving upon the heap of old sacks that served him for a bed, listening to the wind in the lines, to the lapping of the river at the hull. A full moon floated above the mast. It is following me down river, watching me like some great eye. Despite the warmth of the musty skins that covered him, a shiver went through the little man. I need a cup of wine, a dozen cups of wine. But the moon would blink before that horse and griff let him quench his thirst. Instead, he drank water and was condemned to sleepless nights and days of sweats and shakes. The dwarf sat up, cradling his head in his hands. Did I dream? All memory of it had fled. The nights had never been kind to Tyrion Lannister. He slept badly, even on soft feather beds. On the Shy Maid, he made his bed atop the roof of the cabin, with a coil of hempen rope for a pillow. He liked it better up here than in the boat's cramped hold. The air was fresher, and the river sounds were sweeter than dock snoring. There was a price to be paid for such joys, though. The deck was hard, and he woke stiff and sore, his legs cramped and aching. They were throbbing now, his calves gone hard as wood. He kneaded them with his fingers, trying to rub the ache away, but when he stood, the pain was still enough to make him grimace. I need to bathe. His boy's clothes stank, and so did he. The others bathed in the river, but thus far he had not joined them. Some of the turtles he'd seen in the shallows looked big enough to bite him in half. Bone snappers, Duck called them. Besides, he didn't want Lamore to see him naked. A wooden ladder led down from the cabin roof. Tyrion pulled on his boots and descended to the afterdeck, where Griff sat wrapped in a wolfskin cloak beside an iron brazier. The sellsword kept the night watch by himself, rising as the rest of his band sought their beds, and retiring when the sun came up. Tyrion squatted down across from him and warmed his hands over the coals. Across the water, nightingales were singing. "Day soon," he said to Griff.
"Not soon enough. We need to be underway."
If it had been up to Griff, the Shy Maid would continue downstream by night as well as day. But Yandri and Ysilla refused to risk their pole boat in the dark. The upper Roine was full of snags and sawyers, any one of which could rip out the Shy Maid's hull. Griff did not want to hear it. What he wanted was Valantis. The sellsword's eyes were always moving, searching the night for what?
Pirates, stone men, slave catchers.
The river had perils, the dwarf knew. But Griff himself struck Tyrion as more dangerous than any of them. He reminded Tyrion of Bronn, though Bronn had a sellsword's black humour, and Griff had no humour at all.
"Oh, I would kill for a cup of wine," muttered Tyrion.
Griff made no reply.
"You will die before you drink," his pale eyes seemed to say.
Tyrion had drunk himself blind his first night on the Shy Maid. The next day he awoke with dragons fighting in his skull. Griff took one look at him retching over the side of the pole boat and said, "You are done with drink."
"Wine helps me sleep,"
Tyrion had protested.
"Wine drowns my dreams," he might have said.
"Then stay awake," Griff had replied, implacable. To the east, the first pale light of day suffused the sky above the river. The waters of the Roin slowly went from black to blue to match the sellsword's hair and beard. Griff got to his feet.
"The others should wake soon. The deck is yours."
As the nightingales fell silent, the river larks took up their song. Egrets splashed amongst the reeds and left their tracks across the sandbars. The clouds in the sky were aglow, pink and purple, maroon and gold, pearl and saffron. One looked like a dragon. Once a man has seen a dragon in flight, let him stay at home and tend his garden in content, someone had written once, for this wide world has no greater wonder. Tyrion scratched his scar and tried to recall the author's name. Dragons had been much in his thoughts of late.
"Good morrow, Hugo."
Septa Lamor had emerged in her white robes, cinched at the waist with a woven belt of seven colours. Her hair flowed loose about her shoulders.
"How did you sleep?"
"Fitfully, good lady. I dreamed of you again."
A waking dream. He could not sleep, so he had eased a hand between his legs and imagined the scepter atop him, breasts bouncing.
"A wicked dream, no doubt. You are a wicked man. Will you pray with me and ask forgiveness for your sins?"
"Only if we pray in the fashion of the Summer Isles."
"No, but do give the maiden a long, sweet kiss for me."
Laughing, the scepter walked to the prow of the boat. It was her custom to bathe in the river every morning.
"Plainly, this boat was not named for you," Tyrion called as she disrobed. "The mother and the father made us in their image, Hugo. We should glory in our bodies, for they are the work of gods."
"The gods must have been drunk when they got to me."
The dwarf watched Lamor slip into the water. The sight always made him hard. There was something wonderfully wicked about the thought of peeling the scepter out of those chaste white robes and spreading her legs.
"Innocence despoiled," he thought.
Though Lamor was not near as innocent as she appeared, she had stretch marks on her belly that could only have come from childbirth. Yandri and Ysilla had risen with the sun and were going about their business. Yandri stole a glance at Septa Lamor from time to time as he was checking the lines. His small dark wife, Ysilla, took no notice. She fed some wood chips to the brazier on the after deck, stirred the coals with a blackened blade, and began to knead the dough for the morning biscuits. When Lamor climbed back onto deck, Tyrion savoured the sight of water trickling between her breasts, her smooth skin glowing golden in the morning light. She was past 40, more handsome than pretty, but still easy on the eye.
"Being randy is the next best thing to being drunk," he decided.
It made him feel as if he was still alive.
"Did you see the turtle, Hugo?" the scepter asked him, wringing water from her hair. "The big ridgeback?"
The early morning was the best time for seeing turtles. During the day they would swim down deep, or hide in cuts along the banks. But when the sun was newly risen, they came to the surface. Some liked to swim beside the boat. Tyrion had glimpsed a dozen different sorts, large turtles and small ones, flat backs and red ears, soft shells and bone snappers, brown turtles, green turtles, black turtles, clawed turtles, and horned turtles, turtles whose ridged and patterned shells were covered with whorls of gold and jade and cream. Some were so large they could have borne a man upon their backs. Yandri swore the Rhoynar princes used to ride them across the river. He and his wife were green-blood born, a pair of Dornish orphans come home to Mother Rhoyn.
"I missed the ridgeback."
"I was watching the naked woman."
"I am sad for you." L'Amour slipped her robe over her head. "I know you only rise so early in hopes of